Thank you. That was faster than I anticipated. Hi, my name's Mary Beth, and I am an alcoholic. It's nice to be back here. I thoroughly enjoyed the trip up here. It is absolutely stunningly beautiful, a little dangerous. For those who live here, you probably think it's great. But I know when I'm really familiar with a road, I'll drive the speed limit or 10 above. But when you're not, and you see all these gorgeous plantations, that's what they look like to me. I had to really keep my eyes on the road because I was a bit distracted. Anyway, it's just beautiful up here. And the last time I was here, I was with someone else, so at least I got to look around. So thank you for inviting me, Dale, again. I was here. He reminded me it's been 2 years. But I don't know about the rest of you, but I can't believe it's going to be May next week. So is time going fast or is it just me? It's crazy. Yeah. So Lynn prayed with me. Thank you. And I would love for God to relieve me of the bondage of myself. That's our third step prayer. As I begin, normally when I'm going to speak, I'll take some time and read out of my book, which I'll tell you about the cover on this book in a minute, but, and have, have a little time to reflect and just get centered. Well, I did not do that today because it's been a wild and crazy day. I started off at a meeting this morning to recruit women to go to the jail, not as a drunk, but to help to help us in jail. So Sherry, the gal who came with me the last time, we do the jail service, and there are only five of us who are doing it now out of the district down in 29, and we really wanted additional people to help us. So we went over there this morning. And it was like old home week because I've moved to Richmond and I used to live in Midlothian. And that's really where I got sober and spent all of my early years in recovery, which I haven't even told you the date yet, but I'll get to that. So we were able, there were like 12 women, which was very impressive from one home group who are interested in joining the jail group. And so I'm really grateful for that. So I was there this morning, then I had to do some errands, then a sponsee needed to see me, and and then I said, I need to go home because I have to change my clothes because I can't wear jeans and, go crazy at this opportunity to speak. So I'm here, and please, Lord, be with me because he has been. I know that God has been with me even before I came here, but my sobriety date is May 7th, 1996. So I can't believe that it's going to be 29 years in like 2 weeks. And, there's a lot that's happened in 29 years. So there's a lot of life happenings in sobriety in 29 years. And you guys have been there for me through all of that. And I'm so grateful. I know that I'll talk about what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now for the past 29 years. And I'm just really grateful that I'm sober and feel somewhat sane, second step. And have wonderful women that I work with and have a sponsor myself. I have a home group. It's called Into Action, but it wasn't my original home group. I've only had two in those years. The Woodlake group was my home group for 25 years of sobriety. And that was pretty cool. I just never really had, I lived in the same place. So it's like, why bother to switch home groups? And then I moved. So I was driving, and it was on a Sunday night, and I was driving like 30, it was close to 30 minutes to get there. And so I thought, there are AA meetings all over the place, but I always kind of stayed in that little general area. And so I never really ventured out. So I was invited to speak at Into Action on one of their Thursday night speaker nights, and it was January of 20, I think it was January of 20. No, it was 21 because we were still in the pandemic and people were still wearing masks. And so I went in there. I had never been there before. I just had never been to that meeting. And so it was, I was impressed by the people who had been there for a while, the people who opened up that meeting. I think some of you know some of those people. And I was also impressed by how they were so impressed with themselves of all the service work they did. I mean, at the end of the meeting, there'd be 15 minutes of discussion. You know, the chairperson for corrections would stand up, and the chairperson for, treatment would stand up, and chairperson for this and for that. And it's like, oh my Lord, these people are really into service. And I came from a home group that, went to talk, took meetings to Tucker's, took meetings to the jail, did service work at the district level, the intergroup level, and all those other things. But we didn't stand up and rah-rah about it. So I thought, well, this is interesting, that they really are impressed with themselves that they do so much service. Shame on me, but anyway, and then I joined the group. So I guess I'm gonna rah-rah about the home group too. Anyway, I mean, it's very service oriented, and I think it's kind of cute that we announced that at the end, because not a lot of groups do that. You'll discuss it in your business meetings and you'll discuss it with each other, but it's not like it's an open public announcement that we do this. And one of the guy who's doing PI right now, he still says, oh, we used to put signs on the buses. Well, they haven't put signs on the buses in 12 years. And I said, but he said, yes, but we did do it. And I went, well, that's something to be really proud of. Anyway, so I love this home group. I love the people who are there. They have a lot of newcomers. And so, I've had an opportunity to work with a lot of newer people, and and that's been great. But so why is Mary Beth here? I'm here because, I didn't know anything about alcoholism except that my father was a recovered alcoholic. I have an older sister who was an example for me in my drunkenness, who is a recovered alcoholic. And there were others in my family were big relations. My mother's one of 12, and I have 48 first cousins on my mother's side of the family. There are 20 on my dad's side of the family. So there's a lot of we're I don't even want to say what faith we were, but anyway, there was a lot of partying. But I'm not going to say that everybody was is an alcoholic because not everyone is. Some people can have a few and go, phew, it's time for bed. Or phew, I have to, work tomorrow. I'm not going to have any more. And I work so hard at being able to be one of them. I really wanted to just be able to drink like a lady. And once I became a lady, because I was drinking before I was even a lady. But the one thing, the first time I got drunk, the thing that it put in my head is that I was very effective. I could do things. I had this power. I could get things done really fast. And I thought I was doing it really well. And what happened is it was a family, it was Thanksgiving, and I was in the eighth grade, and there were probably, 28 to 32 people at this dinner at my aunt and uncle's. And I did all the dishes. I did by myself all the dishes because, of course, everybody had a bar in their basement, and they were fixing drinks, and I had, I took a sip of my aunt's, and it was an Alexander. I think it had, I don't know, cream or something in it. And oh, it was delicious. Sort of tasted like a chocolate drink. And so I had several and got pretty toasty. I think I was drunk. But anyway, I really liked it. I did all the dishes, and that was my first drunk. And I really, I hear other people share that they couldn't wait to do it again. I just know that I really loved how I felt. And the music was loud up in the kitchen. And, I just felt like I was really effective. And as my drinking continued, I realized that, when I had to go back and inventory myself, that I felt I did things better when I was drunk. And so, when I was working, later on after school, and I'm working, and I felt like I could do my reports better if I were drinking. I could go on a job interview and have a drink and be more effective on a job interview after a drink or two. There were it's I had become Alcohol had become a part of my everyday life from a pretty young age. And it's just the way it was. It's just who I was and how I felt about the product and what I did. And I feel as though it had something, I didn't know that it was more than the alcohol until I came here. But I do feel as though, there were some psychological things that were going on inside of me that actually had me feel that, I needed this in order to feel whole. And that's okay. I mean, it's just who I was and, what I became. And sometimes I feel like I was born an alcoholic. I don't know if anyone else has ever felt that way, but I just, I think back of things that happened when I was little and, pushing through, that I didn't have any self-esteem, but I didn't want you to know that. I wanted to, so I was faking it till I make it. And so that was something when I came into AA, I couldn't fake it till I made it because I had been doing that my whole life. So I had to be really truthful with myself, but I just feel as though it was something that was inside of me, inside of me. It wasn't just this, but this became so much of a habit that I could not drink. And I didn't know that. I had no idea that I could not drink because there were so many times I'd say, I'm not doing this and ever again. That I think about the behaviors, the just the way that I acted. Sometimes I felt like a victim, but my sponsor reminded me that I was actually the victimizer. I'm the one who victimized people, and it started at a young age. So, there was drinking in high school, there were blackouts in high school. There was drinking. I started my geographical changes after high school, applying to colleges. And a cousin of mine was in the Navy, and the US Navy was looking for recruits out of high school and college. And so and this was for civilian service. So I took the civil service exam and I passed it. And I probably had to have a little pop before I went. But anyway, so they sent me a ticket to move to Washington, D.C. and put me, up in, they put up housing for me. And there were a whole lot of young girls there. It was back in the 70s. And it was right at the tail end of the Vietnam War. So it was just a, that was, I was, yes, this is what I want to do. Because I had actually applied and I was going to go to the community college right in my hometown and live at home. But moving to Washington, D.C. was much better. So all these young women that I met, and the young men that we met, I always feel like I probably taught those girls how to drink and party and have a, I just felt like always having a good time. So met, several different, whether they were Navy, Marine, Army, Air Force, I didn't care. But anyway, there were a lot of victims during those years in my path. And one in particular, there were a group of us that decided, okay, so Oklahoma had, they didn't, they had really weird liquor laws. And so two of the guys, one was married to one of my friends, and they decided they wanted to open a bar, and it was liquor by the drink. I don't even understand it, but anyway, it sounded like a great idea. So I up and moved to Oklahoma with this group of people. So there was another geographic, because I was already starting to get into trouble and showing up late for work. I worked for a captain in the Navy, and it was kind of, my behavior was not really, I guess, nice for a young 19, 20, 21-year-old. But anyway, so we moved to Oklahoma. That got me away from the mischief I was causing there. Then after, oh, I ended up getting married to one of the victims. And no, my family really did not like him, and I didn't know that until after we were divorced, but it only lasted about a year. It was one of those things, really quick. And sometimes when I think about him, his name was John McCain, and not the John McCain, but another one. And sometimes when I think about that part of my life, I feel I love to read novels. And I feel like I read this story about this young girl who, went to DC. And I don't think of me as being a drunk. I think of me as being this young girl who had this opportunity, and she went down there and then moved to Oklahoma, and then had met this Marine in DC. And we ended up all going and got married. And I went, oh, wait a minute, that wasn't a novel I read. That was me who did that all in about a period of 3 years. So I have to be realistic that it was me causing havoc in other people's lives and taking him as a prisoner, I suppose, as well. So, or maybe we were imprisoning each other. So God bless him. I haven't seen him since then. And he was on my amends list. And I am willing. I mean, for 29 years I've been willing, but my longtime husband, who I met after I moved back to Virginia from Oklahoma, when he died, James died when I was 6 years sober. When he died, you have to file, you have to do all this stuff with Social Security. And I was too young for Social Security, but there are some things that you have to go and get straight with your spouse. And so when I called them to make the appointment, they said, "Now, were you married to John McCain?" And I said, "Yes." They said, "Well, how long?" And I said, "Why?" And she said, "Oh, no, that's okay. I was just curious." And so then when I go for my appointment at the Social Security office, they said, I said, "By the way, when I called for this appointment, you guys asked me about somebody I hadn't even thought of in 30 years." And she goes, "Oh no, we never would have asked you that. That's a, you're calling me a liar." Anyway, so I suspect that he's dead. I don't know, but I just, there was this, after that happened, which was over 20 years ago when James died, but I just thought, oh my gosh, I bet John died too. So, whatever. Anyway, I've never shared that from the podium, you guys. I have no idea why that even came out. But anyway, I guess it, just part of the, the alcoholic thinking and the alcoholic behavior. After I moved back to Virginia, I lived in an apartment area that was wild and crazy. Of course, I chose the friends that I wanted to have, and they had to be party people. And if any of you are from Richmond or spent any time in Richmond, there were all these apartment complexes along Jenk Row. There was St. John's Woods, Bramble Woods, South Slope, Match Point, all, and they played football, and anyway, it was a lot of drinking. But that was my MO. You know, that's what I wanted. And I'm not going to say that all of us were alcoholics, because, you know, just because people drink a lot or had drank a lot does not necessarily mean the alcoholic. They were able to stop. I was unable to stop drinking. And you know, and I was at the meeting this morning. The topic was the first drink gets you drunk. And so there was some great sharing about that, because that's what I had to realize, is that I can't drink anything ever, 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 because it will get me drunk. Even if I smell it, I guess. I don't know. It's just dangerous for me to be around alcohol, because I know that the Mary Beth that I am today would not be. I may not go back to where I was. I think I will have progressed, even though I haven't drank, because I hear that from people who come and share their experience and what has happened to them. So anyway, I met James. We got married. I was drunk at my wedding. We were drunk at our wedding reception. We were drunk when we went to the hotel. Anyway, it was just, you know, just a big drunk fest. And James drank a lot as well, but he wasn't one of us. He would, you know, later on in our marriage, he had this great big plastic cup, and it was yellow. I forget what's on it. I still have it. But anyway, and he'd fill it up with ice, put a couple shots in there, and then fill it up with Coke. And he'd sip on that all night long. And when it was time to go to bed, he usually went to bed before I did. But anyway, he would dump it out. If there, I'd be like, oh my God. Anyway, but I think about that more now than I actually did then. But it did, you know, I always felt it was curious that I drank so much more. And God bless him, he used to say, you know, Mary Beth, why don't you? Because I love beer. I mean, I love tequila as well, but I really love beer. I said, why don't you drink out of bottle, you know, instead of the cans, and then you'll see how much you're drinking and how fast you're drinking. Brilliant idea, you know. So except then, when you try to recycle or do the trash with all those bottles, oh, for God's sake, you know, trying to use your neighbor's trash can, because what's the trash man going to think of me when he sees all these bottles in here? So, you know, the craziness that you helped me look at myself, you helped me discover about me, this drunk who, you know, I had a good job. I had a son now. You know, we were raising our boy. But when I think of the things that have happened, in my you know, early inventories, because I inventory all the time. I think it's, you know, we were given these 12 steps. Do them all the time, and I really want to get to those. But there was a time. Okay, my son, you know, they're like a 2-year-old toddler. He has a scar on his head. Well, you really can't see it now. I can see it, but he has this scar because I'm, you know, drinking and smoking, and it's a cigarette that hit him on the head, because he ran into me to give me a hug. I mean, you know, I remember my first meeting, some woman asked, she said, well, you didn't drink when you were pregnant, did you? And I went, oh no. I lied. I mean, the first word of the first, or the principle of the first step is honesty, and I had none when I came in here. I wasn't a good example of a professional. You know, I cheated on my expense report. I traveled and would not go to my accounts because I had to stay in the hotel because I'm hungover. I would use, say I used points to upgrade and I really expensed it. I would, there were just so many crazy, that I think they're crazy, and maybe you don't, but so many things that I lied about and I cheated, and I was not a very good mother. I burnt the heck out of his forehead, and when he was a baby, he was born premature, and I don't know if it has anything to do with the smoking and the drinking, and I don't know. It was something internal that happened, and so he was 9 weeks preemie. So I had, of course, first thing I wanted was a drink after. I drank on the way to the hospital to deliver him early. I had to have a beer on the way to the hospital. But I just, there were just crazy times that I could not drink. When I would think that perhaps I would have been able to at least go a little bit of time without it. So I'm grateful today that I don't have to do that. I went to my first AA meeting was on Courthouse Road. It was a Tuesday night. That morning I woke up and I had been managing things, I thought. I had been managing work. I had an office in my home because I was a salesperson, and I had a pretty large area. My boss is in New York. I'm in Virginia. My counterparts are all over the country, so we never see each other unless we're at meetings. So I was able. I just drank. I told you when I first discovered that I was more effective with alcohol in the eighth grade, I continued that. I wrote better reports. I had better conference calls. I was wittier. The only time I really couldn't do it is when I was up at the corporate office and had to do presentations and was not able to drink, but I certainly drank later. But it was crazy. And I'm grateful I don't have to do that. I'll share about my first meeting, and then I'm going to share with you how my sponsor took me through the steps and how I take women through the steps. And I hope I get to that. My first meeting, I feel, was so powerful because I have not had a drink since. And I did not go there with the intention to stop drinking. I went there with the intention to stop drinking so much. But I haven't had a drink since, and that was May 7th, 1996. So I call I my husband was sitting at the kitchen table. Our son had left for school. I had had a conference call the night before, and my office was upstairs, and I had sticky notes everywhere. I had a sticky note on my phone: do not call voicemail. I had a sticky note on my computer: do not send emails. I had sticky notes all over. And to me, that was managing my drinking. I just was, thought I was taking care of myself and taking care of a business. But I don't remember the conference call from the night before. I have no idea what it was about, what I said, what other people said. But sometimes you'd find out the next day because people would call and let you know. So anyway, I get up that morning and Jane, our son's off to school. James was reading the paper at the kitchen table and getting ready for work. And I just said, I need help. Those are magic words. I need help. And he goes, well, I don't know what you need help. I need help. And anyway, but it wasn't about him that day. And my sister was in recovery. My father was already deceased. And James's older brother was in recovery. So he said, well, call Sue or call Robert. So It's like, I'm not sure I want to do this, but I knew I needed help. I knew that I did not want to feel that, that incomprehensible demoralization anymore. I didn't use those words then, but they certainly applied to me when I saw them in the big book. So I called Robert, and he had already gone to work. And there were a couple of guys from Petersburg up at the Into Action meeting, and they remembered my brother-in-law. He's been long deceased as well, but anyway, it was kind of fun that I said he was the first one who told me what to do. So he suggested I call into or I call Intergroup 355-1212, and so I called Intergroup. It's like 8:15 in the morning. And this person who answered, of course, the Intergroup wasn't open yet. I didn't know that. But anyway, there always is someone to answer. And they said, okay, well, where do you live? And I'm in this, Brander Mill area. And so they suggested a meeting at 8:30 that night. This is 8:15 in the morning. And I was like, isn't there anything sooner? And she said, well, not in your area. Well, I probably would have driven to Madison if, that day, if she had said there was one here, because I was pretty desperate. I didn't know what I was desperate for, but I know there was desperation inside of me. And so I cried. I changed my clothes about 19 times. I redid my makeup. And what was really cool is my sister and I talked that day. Neither one of us can remember who called who. But we know that we talked, and she, was so excited that, I may be surrendering that night. And so I go, and she told me what to do. She said, there'll be a bunch of people smoking outside. And she said, that'll be where the meeting is. And so I walk into the church, and nobody was in there, two women in the kitchen. And so of course, I had high heels on, and I'm clickety clicking in there. And I said, is this where the AA meeting is? She goes, oh no, those people are over there. They were in another people. They called us those people. And so went over, I had to get back in my car. And this was God, my higher power was directing me, because Mary Beth only wanted to find out how I could not drink so much. So I go into this meeting, and back in those days, it was huge, like 80 people, and they would split off into two groups. And as soon as they started reading the steps, I heard the first step: we are powerless over alcohol. Our lives had become unmanageable. And I started crying, like sobbing, that kind of crazy cry. And I'd already been doing it all day. And that meeting that night, and it was a good mix of men and women, like 80 people, and some people were even standing. That's how crowded it was. And no one looked at me. No one offered me a tissue. No one patted me on the back. Nobody put their arm around me. They let me sit in my stuff, alone with God. And I say, thank you. Because I don't know if I'd be here today if you would have coddled me. I am flat out serious, because if I had been coddled and loved on and told how sweet I was, and and it's all going to be okay, I'm not sure I would have made it. So for this drunk, I am grateful that you did that to me. At the time, I wasn't. I thought, oh, those people. But the meeting continued, and they said, okay, new people, go in the back. We work on step one, two, three, and the rest stay out here. So I'm a good, I was raised in a parochial system, school system. So I marched back with the other people, and it was packed in there. And two guys led it. They were the chair people. I thought they were the president and vice president. And they, everybody sat in chairs like these, but they were scooched right up to each other. So, everybody's sitting there with their arms, either arms crossed or arms, together, because you didn't want to touch the person next to you. And it was just It was the best. It was a newcomer meeting. And I am so grateful that the first, I'm so grateful I got sober on a Tuesday. I'm so grateful my last drunk was a Monday night, and I don't really remember it. It wasn't New Year's Eve. It was a Monday night, big deal. But that's what we do. We drink every day. And I don't, there are only two things I remember from that night. And there may have been more in the beginning, but one girl was talking about how when you go to a restaurant, they give you these big wine glasses, but they only put this much in there. And that she just didn't think that was right. Well, she cracked me up. I mean, that was the first time I had laughed all day. And then another guy shared, and he's actually a circuit speaker. And he says his full name, Steve Lee. And yeah, great recovery. He shared that he was a salesman, had an office in his home, and that it scared him to death when the phone would ring or the doorbell would ring. And it's like peeking out the window and hiding or, scurrying along the floor to stay under under the windows. And I went, oh my God, he did that too. Somebody was talking about my story. So those are the two things I remember from that night. And then after, then everybody comes back together and they did chips. And I don't remember. I mean, hopefully the person who gave me my white chip remembers, but I don't remember who gave me my white chip. And I didn't even know what I was supposed, we don't know. But I love that we don't know and that we're guided and directed into helping us learn how to do this. And then that was swarmed, which we love to swarm newcomers. And, oh, do you have a big book? How big is it? I mean, I don't, anyway. And then, and I said, yes, I do have a big book. I hope I don't get off of this too much. But Lynn asked me earlier, she said, oh, did you make that? No, this thing is filthy, dirty, and it's stained. But this was received. I got sober in 96. I received this from my older sister in 93. And I still have the letter that she wrote me and, suggested that I read a couple of different chapters in here. And I will keep my language clean, but it was not clean when I opened up that box and, oh, I said, what in the heck is this? Opened it up. And when I saw Alcoholics Anonymous, I was not a happy camper. It was like, how intrusive, how could she even think? And here she was really kind of an example for me, when I was going through all this, because she was having a blast in life, stone cold sober. And anyway, so I still have kept this with this silly little ruffle on it, and but it means the world to me today. And it is a third edition, so I'm really grateful for that. It's my book. I've been, been to a lot of studies and big book studies with that book, and my first sponsor took me through that book. And so I'm really grateful for it. So I told them that night, yes, I do have a big book. I wasn't sure that that was the big book, but I had the book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And they said, well, go home. And I said, it's in a closet up on a shelf. And Steve Lee said, go home and take it off the shelf. When do we do that? That's at the end of the fifth step. Anyway, he said, go home and take it off the shelf and read the doctor's opinion and more about alcoholism. And I did. The good alcoholic that I am and compulsive, obsessive person that I am, I did. I went home and I read those two, and I had a red pencil and I highlighted things in there. I mean, it really spoke to me, and I still love those two chapters. I love every chat. I love every single word in here. It's amazing. And so my sponsor started taking me through the steps, or actually, she took me through the book. I don't know if this is going to stay up here. And I remember that I thought, oh my gosh, why do we have to read all this crazy stuff? We were reading even the blank pages. She would say, this is where you are right now. She was really mean. I'm glad I was raised by mean people in AA, or I may not be here today. I believe in tough recovery, and because I'm not a child, I was not a child, and I'm not today, and so I don't need to be treated with kid gloves. I need to be treated like an adult woman and act like one, if I want to continue in my sobriety. So we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, dash. Not and, but dash, that our lives had become unmanageable. And my first, I've had two sponsors, Joanne and now Suzanne. And Joanne had me do a list. And I don't know that everybody does this, but she says, I want you to write examples, and I don't ever want you to forget them. Or, you don't have to remember all of them, but remember a couple. So admitting powerlessness over alcohol, one thing I had to admit was, I said, well, give me an example. She was really good about that. So the example that I give to people is that I already shared, I flew a lot in my job. So I was on an airplane all the time, and I would swear off. It's like, oh my God, I can't, I have to go home. I have to be sober when I get there. And anyway, so I would swear off. So I since I flew so often, I could upgrade to first class. So they come out and they give you a drink. They start serving first class. And so I'd say, oh, I'll have coffee. I'll just have coffee. And then I could hear those little bottles tingling. I can still hear those bottles tingling, those little tiny airplane bottles. And then she'd come back. I said, you know what? I'll just have a Kahlua, make it two Kahluas. And see, that was the first drink. I was thinking I was okay just to have one or two of those. Now, 7-Eleven outside the Richmond airport saw me 12 pack. I started off with six packs, but I would drink those before I got back to Brandermill. So I had to do a 12 pack so I'd still have some when I got home, just in case James drank my beer. Anyway, so that's an example. And our lives have become unmanageable. I've already told you how I thought I had everything managed by sticky notes. That was really cool. Or I came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. I was a little offended by that, thinking that I was, that you insinuated I wasn't sane. But the behaviors that I had, the thinking that I had, the pro, there was a time I was driving back on 95 from DC, and I can still see this clump of trees, unless they, I haven't done it in a long time, but there used to be this clump of trees. And I remember passing by there going, if I just swerved over, I never really thought about killing myself, but I thought about it when I saw that clump of trees. Because so often driving home on 95, I would see a whole lot of people in a clump of trees. And that, to me, I had to believe that there was a power. That was insanity going on, but there was this power that protected me in my drunkenness. Made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. The best pages, third step, best pages in the big book. Page 60. The first requirement that we be convinced that any life run on self-will can hardly be a success. Goes on to tell me how I'm the director. Well, really, it says you're the actor, but I want to be the director. And I can still go there. I am an alcoholic today as much as I was when I came in here. And I can go there. I have to read that. I have to remind myself that I am not in charge and my God is. Made a searching and fearless moral inventory. Took a lot of courage. That's when I discovered some of those things that I had done to other people. Even if I thought other people did those to me, then I had to realize that I had my part in things as well. Whether it was a long time resentment that I carried toward perhaps something that happened many years ago, having real hate for someone, that's only eating me. That just eats me. And that's what you shared with me to purge all of that. And then there were some people who were on all of those lists, the resentment list, the sexual conduct list, the harms to others list, the fear list. I mean, there were some that showed up on in everything. Admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. And it's I sponsor some women. Sometimes I think, I wonder if I should still even be their sponsor, because we've been friends for too long. We've known. I've been a couple of women's sponsors since they got sober, and they're 20 plus years sober now. And like one I met with today, and it was right on the tip of my tongue to say, "Do you need to talk to someone? Because she isn't talking with me." And I'm not a marriage counselor like my sponsor had said to me when I was married. And you just want to have people be joyful in their lives. And I don't know. I'll pray about it, and I'll give you a report in 2 years. Anyway, and then step, oh my gosh, step six and seven. They're the short paragraphs in the big book, and I was my sponsor had me. She complimented the work with my steps with the 12 and 12, and I'm grateful for that. Even though I do big, I'm like a big book. I'm not a Nazi, but I love the big book. I think that there are some great tools and recommendations in the 12 and 12, especially studying the 12 traditions. You don't short yourself and not do that. Made a list of all persons I had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. So grateful that that James and I had mended our marriage before he died. We about he I was about 2 years sober, and I said, "We need to go to marriage counseling." He goes, "Oh, everybody at this stage in their marriage is like us, and I don't care about everybody else. I want us to go." And he agreed, to go to marriage counseling. And then he said, "Why didn't we do this years ago?" And I said, "Because I'm a drunk. It would not have worked." But it was really, those last, I was 2 years, and then those last 4 years before he died, it was so wonderful. I'm so grateful that I was able to share that time with him. And I am so grateful that I was sober, or it would have been all about me. And I'm so grateful that I was able to stay stopped during that time, because it was really confusing. I mean, I felt like I was 2.5 years after he died, I still had my wedding ring on. And this was just a sidebar, but I was at a meeting, and I noticed somebody there. I am a woman, I am human. And so I got in the car with my sponsor after, and I said, "Do you see that man down at the end of the table?" And she goes, "Yeah." And I said, he was I like what he had to share. And she said, I said, "I think he's kind of cute." And she said, "Well, why would he look at you?" And she said, "Mary Beth, if he has any recovery whatsoever, you are a married woman in his eyes," because, I was still wearing my ring. And I went, "Okay, you're right. Touche." She was absolutely right. So I had to pray about, I was on 288, took my ring off, bawling my eyes out. I mean, it was crazy. But if anyone else here is widowed, I know you understand. It's a devastating thing to go through, but Alcoholics Anonymous brought me to gratitude. Instead of feeling sorry for myself and feeling sorry for, everything that happened, I was able to be grateful for the years that we had together. So I thank Alcoholics Anonymous for that. And I'm grateful that I was able to mend my ways and my behavior, which was very unwifely, with my husband before he died. So I made those direct amends to him. And there was another one. It was something that I felt I needed for someone to apologize to me. And but I had it was something I had to re release myself from holding on to this. And it, I tried my best with the steps to get through this, but I needed counseling. Bill W. talks about counseling in here. And so I did go to counseling, and I informed my counselor that I was going to be there for 6 weeks, and that was it. And just wanting, I went for grief, and this other thing came up, and it was something that was in my first, you know, fourth and fifth step. And I just said, I'm going to put this down on paper, but I don't ever want you to ask me about it. I don't ever want to talk about it. And that was with my sponsor. But this is 8 years, I was 8 years sober when it kind of, you know, it bit me in the butt. And so I had to look at it and I had to address it for me. And I was able, you know, and I shared with the counselor that I was going to review this with my sponsor and, you know, get through this. And it had affected my relationships with the opposite sex my entire life. And I was able to let that go by making an amends. And I tried to do it face to face three times, and it never, the opportunity never presented itself. So I did it in a letter form with a card, and I released, you know, I said what I had to say, and I gave the ownership of that back to the rightful owner. That's what the therapist called it. And so that was an amends. And I was completely honest to God. I felt like bricks were always weighing me down. And I was relieved from that, you know, by going through the eighth and ninth step. Did need some coaching through a professional. But it was beautiful. It was, you know, and I've been relieved of that. So 10, oh my gosh, I love the 10th step. I don't actually read it out of the big book every day like some people do. I was never directed to do that. And so I mean, I hear other people share it, and then I'll go home after I hear them share it and I'll read it. But it didn't really become a daily habit of mine. But I certainly know that we read, oh, I think it's called the Unpopular Guide Through the 10th Step or something like that. It was this little tiny book. And my sponsors group, we read it together. Then I read it with my sponsees. And it talks about that one paragraph in the 10th step, continue to watch. Like a whole chapter was on continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, self-centered. And anyway, so one, anyway, it was a beautiful, so that's, you know, how I do the 10th step today, as I try to continue to watch. And it's like, am I watching all the time? You know, am I always having to watch myself? And it's not like it's become a habit, or it's just become part of my life. Like when I start feeling icky about something, then I'll go, oh, that feels icky. I either need to make an amends or adjust my behavior or keep my mouth shut. You know, best word in the big book is pause. Oh my Lord. Yes. And sought through prayer and meditation, you know, that I remember when I was first doing that, actually in the third step, I would lay down to try to pray and meditate and I would fall asleep. And my Joanne used to say, you've been lacking on rest, you know, so that's God doing for you. And today I do believe in prayer and meditation, and I know that I'm better at it. I do get on my knees in the morning, say the third step prayer, the seventh step prayer, and the serenity prayer. And sometimes I'm saying them with my heart, and sometimes I'm just saying them with my head, but it happens. And then of course the 12th step, I'm honored and blessed to be able to sponsor women. There's actually one that lives in Louisa. I was hoping she'd be here tonight, but I'm not her boss, so I'm just her sponsor. but I am going to give you, I'll give either Dale or Billy her number. You need to get her over here to speak. Anyway, so I sponsor women who have lots of recovery. And then since I've gone over to Into Action, I've sponsored a few women who are brand new. And I don't know if anybody's, please don't be offended, but brand new people, gosh, I was a pain in the butt, you know? And I think about myself and all the demands that I made and all of the contradictions that I would make with my sponsor. And, you know, I'm just, but every time I'll talk to my sponsor and say, I'm done. I am not sponsoring any more new girls. I have girls who can sponsor the new girls. And then God laughs and sends another one. So there is a gal, she just picked up 10 months. And but she had been calling me for 3 years. Have you ever had somebody like that where, you know, somebody gave my phone number to her and she'd call me and I'd say, oh, well, there's a meeting at 8. Why don't you meet me? Oh, no. You know, we're not ready. Oh, or maybe next time. And then she'd call me 8 months later. No, the same thing. Same story. Got drunk, acted like an ass, blah, 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 you know. And I'm, oh, there's a meeting. Meet me. So finally, after about 3 years, on June 10th, which is the AA anniversary, last year, June 10th, she called and had it, you know, crazy again, called me from work on her lunch hour. And I said, oh, there's a meeting tonight. And it was a speaker and it was at, I forget. Anyway, it was at Courthouse Road. I knew Christy was going to be there, Dennis. There were all kinds of people. They had an out-of-town speaker coming. And so I said, okay, meet me. It's called Hopewell United Methodist Church. But it's on Courthouse Road in Richmond. It's in Chesterfield County. So when she heard Hopewell, she's thinking she's going to have to leave work and drive to Hopewell, Virginia. And so she said, okay, I'll meet you there. So I get a text from her and it said, oh, I'm never going to make it to Hopewell. And you know what, you guys? God said to me, call that little stinker. You know, it's not in Hopewell. It's down Courthouse Road. And she said, oh, well, I didn't realize it was down Courthouse. I hope I get there on time. I said, I will be in the parking lot waiting for you. So I can, we'd never met. We'd only talked on the phone. But you know what? I felt like she needed someone not to give her a tissue, but to give her a kick in the butt, like you guys did for me. And so far, you know, this is the first time she's ever been clean and sober for 10 months in a row. And, you know, she's well into her, she's almost 60, I think. But anyway, you know, it's just a blessing that we get to help each other stay stopped. And I am so grateful. I'm so grateful to my higher power. Thank you, Dale. Thank you, Billy. And thank you, Len. And good to see all of you.